This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Some days call for working up a sweat, working on your passion, and endless action. Ditch the glitch with Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Refreshing flavors like strawberry kiwi and blackberry lemonade. Scientifically formulated to support physical energy, hydration, focus, mood, and social stamina. Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Hydrating energy. Tap the banner to learn more.
Welcome to One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. So glad you're here. Got a very important show for you tonight. John Walsh on the investigation and the 33-hour hunt to get the killer of Charlie Kirk. He's going to unwind it for us and where we go from here. Dr. Drew Pinsky on the mind of a killer and where we go with our political rhetoric. And Yu Hewitt, a tribute to Charlie Kirk, along with what was Kamala Harris thinking and putting in her book that suddenly Joe Biden shouldn't have run. But first, we begin with a Fox News alert. An outpouring of grief around the world honoring the life and legacy of slain conservative activist Charlie Kirk. You got candlelight vigils here at home, many memorials overseas.
Well, I guess that you please join us in a moment of silent reflection following the murder of Charlie Kirk.
Charlie's life tragically cut short at the age of 31 years old by a deranged assassin. His wife vowing Charlie's movement and the mission Turning Point USA will live on.
In a world filled with chaos, doubt, and uncertainty, my husband's voice will remain. And it will ring out louder and more clearly than ever. And his wisdom will endure.
Turning Point USA is 3,500 chapters before his death. In the days since his murder, 34,000 young people have reached out to start their own chapters, some of which are in high school. Proof that even in death, his message is sparking new life in the next generation. Now, next Sunday, a public memorial service is planned for Charlie at State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona, the home of the Arizona Cardinals. That's where they play Super Bowls. Former President Trump pledges to attend. But tonight, painful questions remain. The accused gunman, 22-year-old Tyler Robinson, faces his first court appearance. That'll be on Tuesday. New video obtained by TMZ reportedly showing Robinson walking through a neighborhood on his way to Utah Valley University hours before the shooting. And then Robinson is currently being held in a special housing unit by Utah County a sheriff until he clears his mental health evaluations. He's on suicide watch. We're learning more about him, too, thanks to a dark digital footprint and social media messages. Authorities revealing that he was in a romantic relationship with his transgender roommate, same age.
He has not confessed to authorities. He is not cooperating. But all the people around him are cooperating. And there were reports yesterday that we can confirm that his roommate was indeed a boyfriend who is transitioning from male to female. We can confirm that as well, and that he is cooperating with authorities as well.
Of course, new questions tonight. Was anyone else involved? And how can we stop this from happening again? Taking us inside the investigation, host of America's Most Wanted, lifetime crime fighter himself, John Walsh. John, great to see you. Your perspective on the assassination and the 33-hour hunt to find the killer, who they look like they found. How do you evaluate it?
Well, I think Charlie and his family, and by the way, thanks for having me, Brian, I think Charlie and his family are going to get justice right off the bat. This guy's toast. You know, the FBI, Cash Patel, local state police rolled right in, got as much evidence as they could, and they were sending their planes back and forth to Quantico. That's their lab in Virginia. So they're using stuff that they won't release to the public. But take, for example, touch DNA. That's a new way of catching bad guys by just a easy touch on their arm. He touched those railings and touched everything on the way of his escape there. They'll make a deal maybe with his roommate, but the sad thing is it'll take forever. You know, those three college girls and that boy that were brutally murdered at that trial, and that took about 2 years. I've sat through those trials. They're heartbreaking. There is no such thing as closure. They're going to have to deal with it. But I hope it doesn't take as long as most American trials, because they've got him cold. This guy is toast, and his legacy will go on forever.
So, John, what makes this, I think, unique, it's a different challenge. You don't need a bounty hunter to find him. This guy has no history of violence. He has no history of crime. He was a genius kid coming out of high school with scholarship offers everywhere. He doesn't profile as a future murderer. Has the face of the criminal changed in this digital age?
Well, we got a lot of lone wolves. We got a lot of lone wolves, and, of course, the biggest challenge is the Internet. You were talking about it in the last segment. It's just seems more frequent. I've been doing this for 28 years, and it seems more violent, more calculating, more that some of the guys are very interesting, very intelligent. So it's a real challenge. But I got to say, this director, Cash Patel, and the new FBI, I like to call it, and all the local and state police, they're pulling out all the stops to convict this guy as fast as they can and get this family back to healing.
I want to read with you and tell everyone at home, if they haven't seen it yet, what Cash Patel posted. And this gives us clues on the quality of the investigation. He said, against all law enforcement recommendations, we demanded the video and enhanced stills of the suspect be released to the public. Robinson's father, who ultimately turned him into authorities, told law enforcement that he recognized his son in that release video. You're the expert. But it seems to me that's revealing some tension between the locals, maybe the local bureau, and Washington. Is that what you see?
No, truly, I don't. I really don't. They all pulled together. They all rolled out all their forces. Cash made it a point to make sure that people knew what was going on, and working with the state and local police. This one was done by the books, done fast and done right.
If we want to find out if somebody else is involved, some people are pointing to the fact that he talked about picking up a gun from a drop point. Does that show somebody else involved? If you're buying a legal gun, you don't drop it at a point, right? And he's lived with guns his whole life. He knows how to get them.
Yeah, he's a hunter. You can buy a gun in a gun show. Anybody can get a gun. But I think that they're doing a really good job. They're going to make a deal, probably with his roommate. Right now, as we speak, they're probably making a deal. I'm sure his defense attorney is saying, don't talk to anybody. I can get you maybe life without possibility of parole. If you don't shut up, you're going to go to the chair. So their deals are being made. Evidence is really well connected. I think the prosecutors were going to be ready to try this case a lot faster than normal. That will help the family because they got to sit through it. And, you know, his father did the right thing. That family did the right thing, you know, for years doing America's Most Wanted. I've seen people do the right thing and turn their loved ones in. Can you imagine turning your son in for a horrible murder? And, you know, you're hurting terribly. There's no such thing as closure. You've lost a child. I've lost a child. I know what it's like. It's the most unbearable thing. So that family's dealing with a son who went way off the rails. Lots happening behind scenes. I hope this trial gets started soon.
I hear you, John, and I'm thinking about those two little kids who will never really know their dad. And that's also a part of this whole tragedy. There's no winners here. John Walsh, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Meanwhile, John, you heard him mention Kash Patel. He's going to be on with Fox and Friends tomorrow. I'll be interviewing him along with Lawrence and Ainsley. It's going to be at 7:30 Eastern time, but watch the whole show from 6 till 9. Meanwhile, let's change gears just a little bit. It's impossible to get inside the mind of a murderer like accused assassin Tyler Robinson. But we're learning more every day because he left a very dark online footprint, even posting after allegedly killing Charlie Kirk, joking on the platform Discord, writing this: "I'm actually Charlie Kirk. Wanted to get out of politics, so I faked my death. Now I can live out my dream life in Kansas." That is after he killed him. Joining me now for more on the psyche and the motive here, Dr. Drew Pinsky, Chief Patient Officer of the Wellness Company. Dr. Drew, how do you help me understand this? A first-time killer, no criminal background, kills somebody in cold blood, it's international fervor, and he's joking about it online.
Yeah, Brian, it's very difficult, and none of us really know this kid yet, and the details have not been released, so this is pure speculation. But what we are seeing is people that are being radicalized typically are high in what's called the dark triad, which is Machiavellianism, narcissism, and psychopathy. Some people more one than the others. Psychopathy is primarily a genetic disorder. It's something where people don't really feel emotions. Narcissism, people think people have a sense of that, but the great liability in narcissism is envy and empathic failure. Again, not appreciating that other people really exist. And Machiavellianism is getting what they need done on any terms, ruthlessness. And these people tend to use these movements, these social justice movements, to aggrandize themselves. They actually usurp them, but they are very prone to being radicalized and turned on by this kind of thing.
Don't they think of consequences? He's in leg irons. He's going to be brought in leg irons to his hearing on Tuesday. He's never going to see the outside again the rest of his life. Does that ever enter in his mind in your past experiences?
With psychopaths, they don't have emotion. They don't have moral sensibility. So they may not really appreciate what they have done. Others, look at all the people that reacted to this horrible tragedy with glee and dancing and laughter. And they didn't consider how they would be perceived by that. People today, because of really this radicalization, this polarization, this tribalization, they're living in these bubbles where they literally don't understand that the majority of the country are going to see their behavior and be disgusted, be morally outraged. So people are being brought into a state these days where all of us are looking at one movie, but each of us are seeing multiple different films based on the social and the sort of online environment in which we live. It's really getting very, very serious.
Hmm. Yeah, I'll put up some of the Discord dialogue. But after he shoots and kills Charlie Kirk, allegedly, he goes back to his apartment, gets on Discord. And on that there, they say, "This looks like you, Charlie." And we can just put up some of the rhetoric. I'll just paraphrase it. "This looks like you." He goes, "Yeah, it's my doppelganger. What can you do? Maybe we should all collect the $100,000 reward and we can share it." And he's just making jokes about the whole thing. And his dad recognizes the video, confronts him. He said, "Well, I'm not going to turn myself in. I'll kill myself first." And then they finally convince him to go. But the fact that you could see that bullet kill this man coming from your gun, never killed before, talk to those same people, and then just kid around about it. and be that relaxed about it. I guess it goes back to what you originally said, psychopathic behavior, but not displayed that we know of anywhere else.
That, well, it's very hard to detect it sometimes. It can be very well shrouded, and it's sort of, there are sinister elements afoot, and this whole circumstance is bringing it out. I mean, again, I look at the people that are having the reactions that are so inexplicable, and they are similar. It's in that if you dehumanize somebody to the point where you think it's the right, literally the right thing to do, and be aware, social evil is always done in the name of the good. And they literally convince themselves this is right, they'll be a hero. It's sometimes surprising them. And I notice the suicide watch he's on. It is a very, very narrow move from homicide to suicide. Life has no meaning. Feelings have no meaning. It's really a very disturbing situation.
So overall, just before you go, the culture of violence that we're seeing, the political rhetoric that we're experiencing on a daily basis, anything that you would recommend, doctor, to the country? We all have a prescription. We want it to get fulfilled right now.
It is try to develop empathy as much as possible. Try to do some perspective taking. Even some of this outrageous behavior. Yes, there needs to be consequences. Yes, bring the axe down where it needs to come down. But try to understand the state of people are in where they've been whipped into a hysteria where they think behavior that is morally reprehensible is not just okay, but it's in the name of social good. And who is perpetrating this? Who is creating this brainwashing is what we have to get at. And those are people that need to be held more accountable.
Dr. Drew, thanks so much. Also, Dr. Drew's got a brand new show.
Thanks,
if he's not busy enough, check it out. It's called Health Uncensored with Dr. Drew, airing on Lifetime. Dr. Drew, always great to have you on. You're the best. Meanwhile, coming up on this show, we are going to honor the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk. There's no doubt about it. We're going to talk about him, put his life in perspective, but more importantly, where we go from here. Is this a moment in time when we can actually learn and recalibrate? That's the right and that's the left. And next on the show, Kamala Harris releases excerpts from her new book. And Joe isn't happy about it. We will dive in with you, Hewitt, on the reason she's doing it now. Can she actually save her career? Keep it all right here on One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Don't move.
Look, if you're an executive, this...
I want to salute you. New York Times Magazine calls Charlie Kirk the youth whisperer of the right. You're just 31 years old. Your impact is substantial.
Very illuminating piece, very touched by it, and honored to have been captured there. But honestly, President Trump is the one that deserves the credit. I'm just along for a ride. What President Donald Trump was able to do was win the youth vote in the state of Michigan, almost win it in Wisconsin, almost win it in Pennsylvania. We're talking about 30 and 40 point movements.
But you actually go to the campus. You have events. I've done some events with you.
Yes.
And it's pretty amazing what you've done. Is that important to you, to get people that disagree with you?
Well, first of all, that's what colleges should be, is that it should be an open mic type environment where people feel free to express their views regardless of what they are. We are trying to actually bring back college. We're trying to bring back what the academy used to be. We go to these college campuses for just a couple hours. We draw thousands of students, and we have real discussions, real dialogue in the pursuit of truth.
And a fulfill for you that you can own a home, that you can have a better future, and we're hearing from the next generation that they no longer want to be part of the left, and they're just missing that activist spark that was there under Obama, and we are seeing a real right-wing revolution happening with the next generation.
Charlie Kirk, thanks so much. You had so much to do with it, and you're a guy in your 30s, so who knows, one day you'll probably be running for president yourself. Charlie, thank you. Fortunately, we won't have a chance to do that. By the way, you saw we were lucky enough to have Charlie on our show a handful of times. Every time, no matter the topic, no matter the story, he made an impact. He was truly, they call, a youth whisperer, lighting a fire for the younger generation to get involved in politics, to vote, and to not be afraid to stand up for your beliefs. President Trump saw the potential in Charlie early on. Watch.
Don said to me, he's sort of like a son to you. Charlie got involved like 11 years ago, I think. He started, you know, he's a brilliant guy. He was an unbelievable talent. But he was more, it wasn't really so much a talent. He just really believed it. He just believed it. He loved young people. He wanted to help young people. And he didn't deserve this. He was truly a good person.
Really was. Joining us now for more about Charlie's movement and to put it in perspective, as a man who's seen it all and done it all, he's the host of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Fox News contributor, Hugh Hewitt. Your thoughts, now that we've had a few days to digest this and a manhunt is now in our rearview mirror, what are we going to miss most?
Good evening, Brian. I think we're going to miss Charlie as a leader. Charlie's my colleague at Salem, and he's been a friend for 13 years. I first met him on the campus of Colorado Christian College when I was teaching a course for them in the summer for high school students, and the late Senator Bill Armstrong asked me if I would allow this young 18-year-old who was starting something called Turning Point to talk to the kids. I said, sure, give me an hour break. Sat in the back of the room, and I was bowled over by his enthusiasm. Yeah. And so he organically, from that point, grew a movement over the course of a dozen, 13 years. And yes, he was behind and supported President Trump, and President Trump helped him a great deal. But it was, he started at age 18 as an autodidact to learn everything for himself. That's why I'm wearing my Hillsdale tie tonight, because he took every Hillsdale course. He went everywhere he could. He read, he learned, joyful, full of love. And the key thing, I've been hearing people call him divisive. Charlie was not divisive. He believed what he believed. He would let people argue with him. He was a great colleague. He was a great leader. And the tragedy, my friend Alan Estrin, who you may know from PragerU, said to me last night, Charlie wasn't even at 40% of capacity yet. He was growing, right? At 32, 31, he was going to be going for another 40, 50, maybe longer years of leading, but that not an influencer, not a divisive character, a leader of young people. And that mark is not going to go away. That mark will endure.
And think about it, too. Over those years, those kids go through college, they become students, and they become graduates, and they become in their 20s and 30s. And he takes the next four, and the next four, and the next four, and they fill into the electorate. But when it was all said and done, the impact was really tremendous this time. Biden won the youth vote by 26. Trump won it by 18. Think about that turnaround in just 4 years. And that's what the pressure is now going to be on Turning Point and others to make sure that momentum builds. And the sad part is there was really no heir apparent, in my view, with that organization. If there is talent, they got to step forward now. The other story that's getting plowed over for obvious reasons is Kamala Harris's book. It's about her run for the presidency. And we knew this was going to come sooner or later, but it looks like she's calling out Joe Biden and his decision that we've been calling out from day one. She writes, it's Joe and Joe's decision to run or not. Well, we all said that like a mantra, as if we've been hypnotized, was it grace or was it recklessness? In retrospect, I think his decision was recklessness. The stakes were simply too high. This wasn't a choice that should have been left to his individual ego, an individual's ambition. It should have been more than a personal decision. So she's letting him know. Now too late, what she thought about his decision to stay in.
She has made a calculation. She's looked forward to 2028. She's going to run again. And she's made a calculation that there's not much to lose by blaming Biden. He's surrounded by his family and a half dozen aides and nobody else. Democratic Party has deserted Joe Biden. The poor man is sick and he's losing it. But there's nothing to lose. There's no downside in her view. But I think she's wrong because it's cruel. You don't have to do this to an old man who's sick. You don't have to point out the obvious that he made a mistake in running again. What you ought to do is say, I gave it my best. I didn't have enough time. With more time, I will do better. And instead, she's not really gaining anything, but she's telling a lot of independents and a lot of maybe marginally connected political people that she's nasty. And I think it's just the kind of shot you don't need to take at a former colleague. I know you never take shots at former colleagues. Neither do I. This one really leaves me marveling at how little political dexterity she has, Brian.
She really did a terrible job. I mean, she had such an opportunity. When you have an older president, if you're an energetic vice president, that's called opportunity. You don't take credit. You do a lot of stuff. The word gets out to Washington insiders that, man, this woman is a dynamo. Got great ideas in meetings, always different. But instead you heard complaining. Her big complaint, it seems, is that Biden's people never defended her when Fox News would look at her resume and say she was a DEI hire, as I paraphrase. I didn't think they wanted to. I don't think they had too much respect for her. And now it could get a lot worse for her that she opened up fire on Joe.
I agree. I think there are going to be some anger at Team Biden, and Team Biden's going to fight back at her. But compare how Vice President Vance has conducted himself for 8 months. He is now down with the Kirk family. Look at how Senator Rubio, now Secretary Rubio, look at Senator Cotton, Senator Cruz, Elise Stefanik. Our young people, our bench, meaning Republicans, I'm a Republican, they do not act this way. They look forward. They can punch pretty hard, but they don't punch each other. That's what I don't get about the former vice president's attacks on her own people. Even if she is judged correctly, that Team Biden is down to about a half dozen people holed up in Delaware. It doesn't matter. Everybody says, do I really want to work for her if she's going to turn around and clock me later?
Yes. And she also talks about how she couldn't keep any employees because they couldn't handle it. That's the explanation. Unbelievable. Doesn't own anything. It always great. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. Meanwhile, coming up next, China gets a stern warning after it flexes its axis of evil muscles. Senator Steve Daines is here on that. And don't forget to catch me on tour. Yes, nothing is slowing down. Nothing's changing. September 27th, I want to see all Richmond, Virginia. A lot of rich history there. Fox Nation will stream. November 1st, Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Fox Nation will stream. But I want to see you in person. Go to BrianKilmeade.com.
At Fisher Investments, we...
For what purpose does the gentlelady from Colorado rise? Let's
unbelievable. You have a moment of silence. They couldn't even pull that off on the House floor for Charlie Kirk. It erupted in chaos. Democrats turning the silent moment into shouting and finger pointing. Some even blaming President Trump for Charlie Kirk's death. So at a time like this, Charlie would have wanted dialogue, not division. Utah's governor put it this way, wonderfully.
This is certainly about the tragic death. Assassination, political assassination of Charlie Kirk. But it is also much bigger than an attack on an individual. It is an attack on all of us. It is an attack on the American experiment. It is an attack on our ideals. This cuts to the very foundation of who we are, of who we have been, and who we could be in better times.
It's a good point, but it feels like Republicans, time and time again, are the ones expected to rise above it, while especially of late being attacked. The big question is, what can we do to lower the temperature in America? Joining us right now, a man who's very level-headed, Montana Senator Steve Daines. Senator, the manhunt, okay, we got him. Now we find out, more than likely, is a big-time activist. A lot of hate in his heart. Sadly, he's not alone. Is there anything behavioral you could do in Washington to set the tone for the rest of the country?
Brian, this is one of these moments in life for the Daines family. It was a profound moment. My children were deeply affected in a positive way by Charlie Kirk, had friendships with him. We all had our family pictures. We got him out standing with Charlie at Montana State University. What a terrible, terrible loss for the country. But you ask yourself, how do we move forward in this moment of incredible division to take the temperature down? Charlie Kirk was an example of somebody who was doing exactly that. When he would go on campuses, he didn't tell the students who opposed him what to believe. He asked them questions. He said, what do you think? He was always throwing it back to them so they would clarify their positions. And I think it's very important that we don't back away. This is a time to advance. Charlie Kirk is a martyr. Martyrs create movements. We need more of this dialogue on our college campuses. But we can do that in a way like Charlie did. It was thoughtful dialogue. He didn't raise his voice. He didn't shout and scream. He just talked in a thoughtful way, asking questions, continuing to stand for the truth. Going back to our Declaration of Independence, remember we said, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident. What Charlie painted was the truth. They're self-evident, endowed, these rights endowed to us by our Creator. He brought the intersection of faith and politics in a way that was winsome, it was attractive, and he did it in a Socratic way of asking questions of what the other side believed to help them see, frankly, the falses in their beliefs.
So where do you go from here? You want to come back, you want to lower the temperature, but you're about to maybe have a government shutdown. You want to go back, lower the temperature, but you got to do the nuclear option in order to get nominees passed, none of which are controversial. So it's hard to lower the temperature when no one's speaking or working with each other.
That doesn't say that we back away, but I think tone and tenor matters. And I think we've got leaders back in Washington, like Speaker Mike Johnson, like Majority Leader John Thune, who I think exhibit that kind of, I'll call it servant-hearted, but firm and strong leadership. So it's about taking the volume down, but not changing the message. So I think the tone and tenor will matter here. We need to speak in thoughtful ways, but to not back away from what is right, what is true, and hold on to this and continue to work with these young students around the country. When I was around campaigning for President Trump in 24, working to win these Senate races that gave the majority of the president so we can move forward this cabinet and the big, beautiful bill and so forth, people would ask me, what's the secret with young people on college campuses and young adults? I had a two-word answer, Charlie Kirk. He was doing that. We need to continue what his efforts were producing.
All right. Now, another area of your expertise that I want to tap into is China. Great knowledge, great contacts, great perspective. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth delivered a stern warning to China ahead of a potential meeting between President Trump and President Xi. Listen.
China is making a play in our hemisphere as well. Previous administration was asleep at the wheel in multiple aspects of Central and South America. And so a part of having this ARGMU here, having these destroyers here, working out of Puerto Rico and other allies that we have here, is a recognition that America's back in the Western Hemisphere. We should not cede this hemisphere to anybody. And certainly our presence here is a reflection of that, and that includes China.
And China's getting rare earth out of Argentina, big deals with Brazil. They have a huge presence in Venezuela. How do you feel about the president's approach to Central and South America? And why does China want such a presence so badly?
Yeah. Well, Brian, as you know, I spent 5 years working in China when I was in the private sector for Procter & Gamble, launching brands into China to compete. I've made several visits as a U.S. senator into China, meeting with officials. I was there in March in Beijing, meeting with the premier. So I've been engaged with China issues for a long time. But let's come back to a fundamental fact. Joe Biden was a weak president, and adversaries will exploit weakness. The Chinese respect President Trump because he is strong. He has strong leaders like Secretary Hegseth, like Secretary Rubio, like Ambassador David Perdue in Beijing, who used to work in Hong Kong once upon a time. President Trump has an all-star lineup, and they also see the world through with, I'll call it, moral clarity in terms of the issues. And what's very encouraging is Secretary Hegseth just last week had a call with his counterpart in China, Admiral Dong Jun. So you've got to keep this dialogue going back and forth. We don't, one moment, back away.
I think
away,
we agree.
You've got to keep it.
Remember, they couldn't even get a return phone call from the Secretary of State. But real quick, on the question, Central and South America, are we going to be able to push them out, and do we need to?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just down there, Argentina, Brazil, here a few months ago. Absolutely. There's a battle right now for our hemisphere. Secretary Hegseth is correct. So we've got to continue to strengthen our relationship as we look south into South America and Latin America, bring them closer to us. They want to work more directly and closely with us. very important that we stay strong in our own hemisphere. I completely with Secretary Hegseth in his position. This is truly about peace through strength.
We got to find a way to get the Venezuelan people to take back Venezuela from Maduro. I hope the five destroyers send the right message. Thanks so much, Senator Daines. Appreciate it. Have a fantastic rest of the weekend and week. Meanwhile, coming up on this show, all eyes on the New Jersey governor's race. Republican Jack Cittirelli is looking to flip the state red, and he'll tell us just how he plans to do that next. Don't move. I'm watching you.
Points your toes. You never roll in the hay. You never fall in four-wheel. Climb up on in.
Thanks for calling, consumers.
How important do you think religion is in this day and age?
Very important. Yeah, I mean, as America becomes more secular and as the country becomes less godly, we become less free, more miserable, more depressed, more suicidal, more anxious, etc.
You create a company that's like close to being a fascist. Like,
okay. How am I?
Sorry.
Let's go through this. How am I a fascist?
No, dude. Like you.
Can you name one thing I believe that's fascist?
You believe that like you are.
I'm such a bad fascist. I let the people who disagree just, in open mic to talk to me for 2 hours uninterrupted.
I'm an
awful fascist. What is her greatest...
Hey, free speech? Free speech?
Yeah, they have the freedom of speech to boo you.
Yep, Charlie Kirk made it his life's mission to inform and to empower by engaging constructive political debates on campuses. He said when people stop talking, that's when violence begins, ironically. My next guest echoed the same sentiment upon hearing the tragic news of Kirk's assassination. Joining me now, Republican gubernatorial candidate in New Jersey, Jack Cittirelli. Jack, great to see you. I know you got
to
go out and about.
Great to be back with you.
Your thoughts about what we've experienced from the assassination to the manhunt to what we now know.
It's heartbreaking, but I think all of us felt confident that our law enforcement professionals were ultimately going to track down this assassin. And thankfully, it happened in quick order. But we're all still...
Are you hesitating about doing all these live events? I mean, you have to do big events, small events. You got to shake thousands of hands 12, 14 hours a day. Are you approaching it differently?
I think the way to honor Kirk's memory is to get out there as he did. And I continue to do so. And I look forward to doing it all across New Jersey.
So let's take a look at the gains you're making. Everybody knows you stunned everyone, despite really not getting much support from the Republican Governor Association. You came within 3 points of being the governor. Now you're in this new poll, and there was a late surge that did it. You got to be encouraged. You're now down by two to Mikey Sherrill, 47 to 45. How have you closed the gap? What's happening out there in New Jersey that's always been big blue?
We're getting out each and every day and talking about the issues that matter to New Jerseyans, and my opponents in hiding. But listen, Brian, I only have 21 to compare this to. I really thought we were going to win in 21. We came awfully close. But I will tell you, as I go around the state this time around, the energy is electric, and it's not just Republicans. In the last 4 weeks alone, I've had three Democratic mayors endorse me, and then one of them switched over to the Republican Party.
That's pretty impressive. On the same poll, they said, who do you blame for the problems New Jersey's having, for example, with utility costs? 78% blame Murphy. 14% blame Trump when it comes to the economy. 57% believe New Jersey's on the wrong track. How does that shape what you do?
Hey, listen, you're not going to BS the people of New Jersey. Every one of Phil Murphy's policies have been a failure, whether it's housing, whether it's energy, whether it's taxes, spending, law enforcement, overdevelopment, all the above. And people have had it, and they're angry. So for my opponent to go out each and every day and blame our property tax crisis on the president, our energy crisis, and our monthly electricity bills, which are skyrocketing, on the president, people are just not going to take that. They know the truth, and I think that's one of the things that's putting us in a really, really great position here.
Jack, a lot of people at Fox work and live in New Jersey. And one of the things they told me to ask you is the utility cost is changing everybody's budget. But what I was fascinated to find out, this is a self-inflicted wound from Governor Murphy. It's not what Governor Christie left.
It's not, Brian. When Murphy took office, New Jersey was an electricity exporter. We now have to import it because he shut down six different electricity generation plants, didn't expand our nuclear footprint in South Jersey, didn't accelerate solar on all these commercial rooftops, including warehousing. And look where we are today, having to import it through these exchanges and paying through the nose. I can lower people's rates on day one by pulling us out of REGI. The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative has been a failure, and we're paying fees for things that don't help us. That stops on day one of my administration.
Well, I love this ad that you have coming out of your campaign. It's off a CBS interview, I think, of your opponent, Mikey Sherrill. Watch.
So, last question. If you could pass one piece of legislation,
what would it be?
Wow, I would love, that's a really good question because there's so many that are coming to mind right now. But right now, I would love at this point to pass legislation to send a federal block grant back to states, back to the state of New Jersey.
To run some really key programs and innovate on them.
Why was that important to put out there?
Brian, it's a disqualifier. My goodness, with the crises that are raging around this state, for her not to be able to answer that question. But here's the reason why. Like John Corzine, like Phil Murphy, she's not from New Jersey. And if you're going to interview for this job of governor, do your damn homework. She hasn't. And so we're just going to continue to get out there each and every day, remind people I'm a Jersey guy. We've been here for 100 years, the Cheddarellis. We've all owned our own businesses, and we know what we need to do to get things done to make life better here in New Jersey.
All right, and if you could do something about the traffic, I'd come over more. But we have the same problem on Long Island. Jack Cheddarelli, best of luck. Stay safe.
Brian, thank you.
You got it. Up next, your sneak peek of the week ahead. Don't move, and don't forget, follow me on social media, Rumble, Instagram, X, and Facebook. And I put these videos now on Culper Club. It's off Locals. You're going to love how Bear is growing. Last we weighed him in, 40 pounds. He started at 20.
Hungry Root is here.
Before you go, let me set you up for the upcoming week. We call it the sneak peek of the week. President Trump will be going on the road. He's going to love this. He's going to have a second royal visit with the royal family. It's going to be great to see the king. They seem to get along, even though one's a big environmentalist and the other one kind of likes oil, gas, and coal. Meanwhile, the Senate, GOP, set to confirm 48 Trump nominees. There is no controversy. Dems just didn't want to put him through. The nuclear option is going to be used. Mike Waltz better be in as UN ambassador. And two hearings to watch that I want you to keep an eye on. They're about soft on crime policies. Mayor Bowser will be there. She's going to have the political tightrope to walk. And another of the rising threats of malicious drones in America. I'd love an answer to the question, how do we block a drone attack? Maybe we'll get it this week. That is it for us tonight. Got a radio show, had big guests coming your way from 9 to noon every single day. BrianKilmeadShow.com. We also have that podcast. Be sure to catch me on Fox and Friends, weekdays starting at 6, and we'll end whenever we can. Remember, I got two things to say. Stay within yourself, and whatever you do, keep it here on Fox. Now bring the music up.
We all have that moment. Ugh, where did I save that? Dropbox Dash, new from Dropbox, searches across all your apps and tools, even if you forgot what you named your video edit, your presentation deck, or your marketing plan. Even if it's buried in email, Slack, or a deck called final_final for real. And once it finds it, Dash can help you draft what comes next. Fast. From scattered to sorted, without slowing down. Learn more at Dropbox.com/Dash.